Jesus, I have decided to give you this.
Really?
Yeah.
You know whoever sits here makes all the decisions, right?
I know, and I'm always making decisions. But you make the perfect decisions, so you just sit right down and start making them.
Wow, I'm honored. I mean, this feels great.
Kathleen, guess what? I just got my new credit card. It's time to go shopping.
Oh, really? I thought your husband and you were going to pay off debt.
Oh, yeah. I mean, money's kind of tight, but I figured he doesn't have to know about it. So do you want to go with me?
No.
No?
Why?
What I mean is, I don't know. So let me check my schedule, and then I'll get back to you.
Okay, yeah, give me a call.
Okay.
Kat, what's going on?
What do you mean?
Well, I'm kind of one-cheeking it here. Look, I just want to make sure we're on the same page. You wanted me to sit here, right?
Well, of course.
And whoever sits here makes all the decisions?
Right.
So what's the problem?
There's not a problem. I don't know what I was thinking. Really, please, here, sit down.
As long as you're sure.
I'm sure.
Okay. So let's start over.
Okay.
All right. Kat, I noticed that you've been losing your temper a lot lately.
Right. So, okay, Jesus, you know what? I know what you're going to say, but see, you don't know the whole situation, you know?
Oh. Well, all I'm saying is that your attitude is a decision.
Yes, of course, but I have a lot going on right now.
Well, I know you're under a lot of pressure.
Pressure? Jesus, you don't understand pressure, okay?
This isn't working, Kat.
What?
We can't both sit on the seat. It's either me or it's you.
Okay, I know. You know, I didn't think it was going to be this hard, but here, just take it.
No, I'm not going to take it. You have to give it to me.
Okay, here.
Kathleen, make a choice.
I can't.
You just did.
All right, guys, I came across that, and I thought, what? What's the matter? Well, there's a lot on that. Yeah, I mean, I want you guys to understand. I mean, when I came across that, guys, you know, hold on, would you calm down over there and let me talk? Guys, when you see a video like that, first of all, part of it reminded me of being at home with my daughter because she climbs on me like that and whatever else. Guys, but also, I mean, the point I think the video was trying to get across, actually, guys, tell me, what was the point the video was trying to get across? Not about, right, about wanting to kind of assert your own control, right? And wanting to say, you know, hey, God, we want your help here, but not here, and we're going to make our decisions, and we're going to do this ourselves, but not this ourselves. And so that's really kind of the point I think the video itself was attempting to make. What we do is we look in here in Genesis 24, and that's where we started off last week. But guys, what I want to look at is God's thumbprint, God's fingerprints, God's working in all of our lives. Right? Because we see that in Genesis 24. And we see that sometimes, guys, what happens is we struggle. And we struggle because there's that battle. We want to have control on our own. We want to be able to do things ourselves sometimes. And we kind of put God on the back burner and say, no, I got this. I got this, God. I can do this myself. I don't need your assistance. I don't need your help, when in actuality, we do. And what we also do, guys, is we see all along how God's been interacting in our lives. And so we're going to start off here, guys. We're going to kind of do a little bit of a review, and then we're going to really get into it here. Shelly, is that thing set up for remote control, dear? Is that me or is that you? Okay, then I guess it's working now for me. Guys, we always do some kind of Charlie Brown, so faith is holding on tight when the going gets windy. I figured that was kind of appropriate since, you know, it's storming outside and whatever else. Guys, we have storms in our lives, many of them. And faith is about, and by the way, if you're not here for a Friday night Bible study, my wife and I came for the first time Friday. I mean, I'll admit we've not been here at this point. What a fantastic Bible study it is, talking about faith. Talking about how we use faith or how sometimes our faith is weak and we spent time talking about the armor of God, which is absolutely fantastic. So I encourage you guys to come to that. I'm going to hopefully be there from now on because I thought it was great. But guys, faith is something that we sometimes struggle with. And in that little video you guys just saw, I mean, you saw like struggling with faith, right? And saying, hey, we're gonna be all in, we're going to give to God. And then sometimes we back off. And that creates an issue. Creates a huge issue because we want to give it all to God, right? And we talked about how some of us are struggling with that in here, in here, in our relationships and in our life right now. So guys, reviewing very quickly where we've been, how we got here. When we last left off last week, remember we had Abraham, and Abraham wanted Isaac to have himself a girl. Okay, but not just any girl, not just a girl to date or whatever else. He wanted the one. And so he made his servant, you guys remember the servant's name? Huh? No, different book. Eleazar, remember? He went out, he went all the way back to his, back to where Abraham was from, and he was looking for a girl, and he said, you know, it was going to be a girl for Isaac, but it had to be the right girl. You don't want it to be a Canaanite girl, because the Canaanite girls were all doing these things that they shouldn't be doing. And so he wanted a girl from a good lineage, really related to Abraham, if you will. And so then Eleazar goes back, and he takes these camels. Remember, we did some math last week. He took some camels, and he paused there, and he prayed to the Lord, and he showed his faith, and he said, God, you know what, help me to find the girl that's supposed to be the girl for Isaac. What'll happen is she'll come out, and then she'll offer me some water, and then she's going to offer to give all the camels water. Remember, we did all the math. It was like 80-some trips she was going to make back and forth just to make sure that the camels had gotten the water that they had needed. And behold, there was Rebecca. Okay? Behold, there was Rebecca. And so he'd prayed for that. And remember, the cool thing about the verse we had read was before he was even done praying for it, Rebecca was on her way out. And guys, that is something to note. Now, this chapter that we are in right now, Genesis chapter 24, we talked before, it is the longest of the chapters that you're going to find in Genesis. And really what it is, it's a telling. Remember last we talked about, it's like how I met your mother. It is here is how Isaac came to know Rebecca, or at least Rebecca came to be with Isaac, if you will, as we kind of finish out the story. So, where we left off, we had Eleazar, we had Rebecca, they had made contact, and they had this conversation, and Rebecca, you know, she had brought water to the camel, she had done all the things that had been asked of her, and it was fantastic, and now all of a sudden, Rebecca says, you know what, we do have, because Eleazar asked if there was a place where he could go and lay his head, because it had been a long journey and all this stuff, and Rebecca was like, yeah, sure. And so she ran off, and she ran home. And what I want you to see are a couple of key things. Now look, there's a lot to read here in Genesis, but some of it is a retelling of what we already know. So if you missed last week, this is going to kind of catch you up a little bit. So Rebecca had a brother whose name was Laban. Laban ran out toward the man. So remember now, she's on her way home. She got back to her house, and her brother's there. Now that's significant because her brother's there. Her brother's going to be kind of like a lead negotiator here. Because this just wasn't a simple, hey, do you want to go and be a wife to this guy? I mean, brother's got kind of some motive that we're going to see here. Okay, Laban ran out toward the man to the spring. And so soon as he saw, remember that Eleazar had given her some jewelry. As soon as he saw the ring and the bracelets on his sister's arms and heard the words of Rebekah, his sister, thus the man spoke to me. He went to the man, and behold, he was standing by the camels at the spring. And so one thing to see here very quickly is that brother kind of saw the gold and stuff, got a little bit excited. He's like, well, okay, someone's going to want to make her a bride, and they're rich. That's a good thing for him, right? Because he's going to ask for, whenever, you know, especially back in the day, like nowadays, you know, talking about relationships and whatnot, you know, it isn't like, you know, like let's say that when Shelly and I were dating, I didn't go over to Shelly's house and be like, well, hi, Shelly's parents. Here's some money. Can I take your daughter out on a date? That'd be a little weird, right? That's not how it happens, right? But back in the day, it was, you know, if you wanted someone, if there was, this courtship was a matter of, hey, she was going to go and become Isaac's wife. And so there was a little bit of a dowry going on. Here's some stuff. Here's some riches for you to show you that I can take care of this girl. And so, you know, her brother, he's pretty excited because obviously this guy was pretty well off. We read further. He said, come in, O blessed of the Lord. Why do you stand outside? For I have prepared the house and a place for the camels. So the man came to the house and unharnessed the camels and gave straw and fodder to the camels. And there was water to wash his feet and the feet of the men who were with him. Then food was set before him to eat. But he said, I will not eat until I have said what I have to say. And so he said, speak on. So brother is all pumped up, right? He's all excited. And here's Eleazar, and brother's kind of like, all right, what's the deal going to be here? All right, I see you want Rebecca. What's the deal going to be? And here's the key thing, guys, out of this, and some of this that you're going to see is, well, it's just kind of story, sort of, but not really. Guys, something very important happens here at the very end. And it's a good example for all of us. Because here at the very end, in verse 33, food was set before him to eat. First of all, I understand this guy had to be starving. Okay? I mean, it was a long journey. This guy had to be starving. Okay? This food is set before him. Okay? But he said, I will not eat until I have said what I have to say. He is there. Remember what he's doing. He is there for his master. He is serving his master. And the idea of having his own pleasures of food or rest or whatever else, none of that was his concern. His concern was, no, first item of business, what my master wants, my master gets. And then we'll worry about me. Now, folks, that is quite contrary to the way we oftentimes live, right? Okay, that is. I mean, plain simple, I've been very honest with you guys about sometimes my prayer life is not the best, because I'll go home and I'll sit on the couch and I'll be tired and we'll turn on Netflix and we'll sit there and we'll just veg out, and I'm putting all of that in front of time with the Lord. And guys, we do that a lot. We put our own pleasures, our own desires, our own whatever in front of God's purpose, what his plan is, and what we're supposed to be doing. In this case, though, we see Eleazar did not. He said, well, before you feed me, before I take a rest, before anything, I'm going to handle my master's business. And again, that's a pretty good lesson, I do believe, for us all. All right, so we're going to read a lot of this now, and I'm going to go kind of fast through it, because some of it is a retelling of what we already know. But he is sharing this information now with her brother. And so he said, I am Abraham's servant. The Lord has greatly blessed my master. That's important, because again, he's talking about greatly blessing his master. And so now, again, dollar signs. And he has become great. He has given him flocks and herds, silver and gold, male servants, female servants, camels and donkeys. And Sarah, my master's wife, bore a son to my master when she was old. And to him he has given all that he has. And so he's setting the stage and saying, he's got a son, and his son has it all. And so again, he's laying the foundation here. My master made me swear, saying, you shall not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites in whose land I dwell, but you shall go to my father's house and to my clan and take a wife for my son. I said to my master, perhaps the woman will not follow me. But he said to me, the Lord before whom I have walked will send his angel with you and prosper your way. You shall take a wife for my son from my clan and from my father's house. Then you'll be free from my oath. And when you come to my clan, and if they will not give her to you, you will be free from my oath. Again, guys, remember, this is all review from last week. We went over this, we covered this. I came today to the spring and said, O Lord, the God of my master Abraham, if now you are prospering the way that I go, behold, I am standing by the spring of water. Let the virgin who comes out to draw water, to whom I shall say, please give me a little water from your jar to drink, and who will also say to me, drink, and I will draw for your camels also. Let her be the woman whom the Lord has appointed for my master's son. And again, we know all of this. Remember, one of the things we talked about last week is the fact that Eleazar, we see his faithfulness in God. And we talked about the fact that, you know, he probably witnessed Abraham again and again and again worshiping the Lord, obeying the Lord, trusting in the Lord. And so we talked about how our behavior as well can be an indicator for other people, how they can look at us and what we do and hopefully gain the same kind of idea. They see us worshiping the Lord. They see us loving Jesus Christ. May we be an example for others the way Abraham was here. Okay, so more to read. All right, and again, more review. Before I had finished speaking in my heart, behold, Rebekah came out with her water jar on her shoulder, and she went down to the spring and drew water. I said to her, please let me drink. She quickly let down her jar from her shoulder and said, drink, and I will give your camels drink also. So I drank, and she gave the camels drink also. Then I asked her, whose daughter are you? She said, the daughter of Bethuel, Nahor's son, whom Milcah bore to him. So I put the ring on her nose and the bracelets on her arm. And so now she's adorned with bracelets on her arm and her nose. And again, that's what he saw. Then I bowed my head and worshiped the Lord and blessed the Lord, the God of my master Abraham, who had led me by the right way to take the daughter of my master's kinsman for his son. And so there's a relationship here. Okay, there's a relationship between Abraham and Rebekah. And this is exactly what Abraham had asked for, what he had wanted. And so he's saying everything is just fitting right into place. Now then, if you are going to show steadfast love and faithfulness to my master, tell me. And if not, tell me that I may turn to the right hand or to the left. Okay. Oh, see, I get bigger now because this is the part where we're now new stuff. Okay, then Laban and Bethuel answered and said, the thing has come from the Lord. We cannot speak to you bad or good. Behold, Rebekah is before you. Take her and go, and let her be the wife of your master's son, as the Lord has spoken. So, hey, this sounds great. They're like, all right, you know what? We've heard everything you've said. We are now going to, you know what? Take her. She's yours. Please feel free to take her. This is fantastic. Okay, when Abraham's servant heard their words, he bowed himself to the earth before the Lord, and the servant brought out jewelry of silver and of gold and garments and gave them to Rebekah. He also gave to her brother and her mother costly ornaments. There's that dowry we had talked about. And he and the men who were with him ate and drank. And they spent the night there. When they arose in the morning, he said, send me away to my master. Her brother and her mother said, let the young woman remain with us a while, at least 10 days. After that, she may go. Now, that's a little bit concerning. Okay, why did they throw out there, well, let's not send her yet. Let's wait 10 days. What do you think? Is there a reason for it? I'll tell you, it's a good example a little bit of, and I read this, I think it was on, oh, I forget where I'd read this part, where they said, it's a pretty good example of the way sometimes we view life, where people we know maybe who are not believers, or the world, if you will, they see and you're all gung-ho for Christ, and you're all in worshiping the Lord, but then they kind of hold you back a little bit. In this case, they were like, yeah, take her, but hey, let's wait a little bit first. Let's make sure this is actually the way it's going to work out. Let's make sure this is going to be the right thing for us to do. And so the servant has something to say about this. He says, but he said to them, do not delay me, since the Lord has prospered my way. Send me away that I may go to my master. They said, let us call the young woman and we'll ask her. And they called Rebekah and said to her, will you go with this man? She said, I will go. So they sent away Rebekah, their sister, and her nurse, and Abraham's servant, and his men. And they blessed Rebekah and said to her, our sister, may you become thousands of 10,000s, and may your offspring possess the gate of those who hate him. Then Rebekah and her young woman arose and rode on the camels and followed the man. Thus the servant took Rebekah and went his way. Now Isaac had returned from Beer Lahairoi and was dwelling in Negeb. And Isaac went out to meditate in the field toward evening. And he lifted up his eyes and saw, and behold, there were camels coming. And so look, here's the thing I see too, guys. Isaac is out in the field, and you know, he's meditating. He's basically down on his knees before the Lord, and he's thinking, and he's praying. He's a prayerful man, is what he's doing in this situation. So Rebekah now and Isaac are going to meet. It's very lovely. And Rebekah lifted up her eyes, and when she saw Isaac, she dismounted from the camel and said to the servant, who is that man walking in the field to meet us? And the servant said, it is my master. So she took her veil and she covered herself, wanting to do the right thing, right? And the servant told Isaac all the things that he had done. Then Isaac brought her into the tent of Sarah, his mother, and took Rebekah. And she became his wife, and he loved her. So Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. Now, a couple of key things. Okay, actually there's a lot to see here. Guys, but first of all, notice that a big chunk of that is a retelling of what we already knew. Now, there are a couple reasons why that is so. Okay, first of all, it's biblical. It is in Deuteronomy 19:15. If you guys want to go there, pretty much saying, you know what, yeah, I got to have more than one witness to these things. Okay, yep. More than one witness to these things. So it was important that these stories and these things that had happened were told and they were retold, and so people would know. And guys, also notice the detail with which he gave everything. Guys, that's also for prosperity. So because remember, there wasn't, hey, I'm going to tweet that. Hey, cool, this guy just showed up and he wants Rebekah. I'm going to tweet about that right now. There wasn't any of that, right? There was none of that. So he heard the story, and from there they could also share the story with other people that they came into contact with. And so, guys, we see the retelling. That's why Eleazar went into so much detail about this particular thing. But, guys, here's the key thing. You see God in all of this, right? All of these things. Remember the long journey that they went on. You know, they could have been killed along the journey. That didn't happen. It could have been any woman that came out there and offered water. But no. It was Rebecca. It was just the right person. Because we'll find out coming up soon here about Isaac and Rebecca and their relationship and the children that they have. And remember, we talked about God said how Abraham would be blessed and descendants and nations would come from him. And this is part of the story that Israel is being told. But guys, we see God's love and God's fingerprints on everything we do. Now, here's the thing we oftentimes forget to do. We often forget to stop and look back and see it, right? And we're going to get into some stuff here in a second, but I just made a list of things of my own. Remember we said there's no such thing as coincidences. So I'm just going to run through a very, very quick list. Teaching, for me. There was a point in time when I could have been a teacher in Groveport, Ohio. Let me explain to you very quickly how this happens. I'm going to tell you how God worked in. And you know what, guys? Let me back up a little bit. We don't always realize it's God working when things happen to us. We don't stop and think that it's God's hand on us when these things happen to us. But I'll tell you, I found out that I was getting cut from Buckeye Trail, and then I very quickly started applying places. And then there was this place that wanted to interview me 3 times. Boom, boom, boom. 3 days in a row. I missed 3 days of school at Buckeye Trail because I was interviewing at this place. I did the first interview. They liked me. They brought me back for the second interview. They liked me. The third one, I had to teach a lesson. And if I told you guys this, I apologize. But when I was teaching, I knew what I was teaching, right? I mean, stuff that I had taught many times over. They made me teach a lesson to them. It was over protons, electrons, and neutrons. Alex laughs because he sat through my class. I had to do that. Protons, electrons, and neutrons. And right in the middle of it, right in the middle of my teaching, a lady, she just asked me a question. She said, asked me about the masses of electrons, protons, and neutrons. A question I've been asked many times before by students. A question I knew the right answer to. A question that I froze on when she asked me. I just sat there and looked at her. She's like, well, and my mind was blank. Blank. And so I told her protons, and it was wrong. And she didn't call me out on it, but I got a call when I got home saying how I was not going to be the teacher out there in Groveport, Ohio. And while I was disappointed at that time, guys, remember I always say about coincidences, if I was out in Groveport, Ohio, guys, my life is completely and totally different than my life is right now. Because the next thing that happened was I came home and I interviewed at Philo. Ta-da! Here I am. Ta-da! And guys, so you see God's fingerprints in things like that. Guys, think about it this way. Think about the number of people who are put in our path as believers in Jesus Christ. The number of people, and again, it's not a coincidence we run into the people that we run into. It's not a coincidence that we can have the conversations that we have. God has made this all happen and made this all possible. Guys, and so when you have those conversations, when you're blessed to have those conversations, God is putting us in situations where we respond. Every bad relationship you have ever had, think about that for a second. I've had some bad relationships. I've had some good relationships. I've had some bad relationships. Guys, every bad relationship you've ever had. And while, I don't know, I mean, you may have had some really bad breakups in the past or whatever the situation might be, there's a reason for that. And oftentimes we say God's fingerprints, we think it's only in the good things that happen to us. No, guys, in the bad things that happen to us too, we see. Because you know what? In my bad relationships, and probably in yours too, I learned stuff. Do you guys learn stuff from your bad relationships? We did, right? We did. We learned from bad relationships and bad friendships and things and things that go wrong. We learn from those things, and it's God showing us what to do and teaching us lessons to help us along the way, preparing us, if you will, for other things that are going to come our way. I also wrote down my grandma. I mentioned her before. But she lost her husband at a very early age. He was like 30. She was like 28. He had cancer, and he died. So what she did was she decided that she was going to get remarried pretty quickly. She married a guy who was an abusive drunk. Now, you may say, okay, well, how's that? How's God's, you know, hand in that we see? Well, guys, after that relationship and after she quickly, hurriedly got away from that relationship, that's when she found the Lord. That's when she started going to church. That's when she started to like I told you, she was the one who would every Easter or whatever else, she'd give us little Bibles and all this stuff. I mean, how she became that woman, that was the stepping stone from that incident that happened in her life. You can see, even though she went through those horrible things, that was God saying, okay, we're going to position you now. We're moving you a little bit this way. And how it happens. I've mentioned Shelley's parents before, tragically losing their son at the age of 7, and how beforehand, and I don't think they'd mind me telling you this, how beforehand, you know, they weren't church-going people. But by golly, when they lost their son, they decided that it was time to make a change in their life. And they started going to church, and they you know, her dad's on the church board, right? Is that what's called out there, the church board? I mean, so he's on the governing part of the church. I mean, and for years they've been doing that, and then they did that because they realized things weren't going right. They wanted to see their son again sometime. They wanted to see him in heaven. And so we see God's hand in those things. I asked Shelley for an example, and she mentioned how she wasn't sure about if she's going to homeschool the children or not. And so she prayed to God. She said, God, I don't know what I'm going to do. I need a sign. I need you to drop this in my lap so I know that this is what you want me to do for our kids. Because she was on the fence so much, going back and forth, back and forth. Just so happened she was selling Mary Kay at the time, and she knew a lady from a MOPS group that she was in, and she said, hey, throw a party for my daughter and her something or other, friend, I don't know, somebody. Sorry, I forget who they are. So she threw a party with them, like a Mary Kay party. The whole point was to get together and sell makeup. Like, that was the whole point. But then they got talking, how these ladies knew each other. They knew each other because they've been homeschooling their children for years. And so my wife was like, oh, homeschooling, let's talk about that. And over the course of time, you know, talking makeup, whatever else, they talked about homeschooling. Okay? And my wife left there, and she was like, you know what? It felt like God dropped it right in my lap of saying, this is what we're supposed to do for our children. I'll just throw, because time-wise, I'll just throw one other example out, guys. Something even very simple. And I don't know if I showed this with you guys or not, but when Travis was in the hospital, I went out there to pray with Travis. You know, I met with him for a bit, and Jackie was out there, and I met with them both, and we were hanging out, and we're talking, and you know what? And think about timing for a second, right? Timing. Well, like a matter of seconds, one way or another. Maybe you miss an encounter with someone that you could have had an encounter with or whatever else, but God's timing is absolutely perfect. And so I was in there, and it was time to leave, and I was like, hey, guys, let me pray with you before I go. And so I grabbed both their hands, and the nurse who was standing there just waiting to, like, take his blood pressure was like, can I join with you? And so we got to pray for him and for everybody else in that building and whatnot. And I know I've shared with you guys before about this lovely scar I have underneath my eye, about how that all kind of came to be. It was a stupid accident where so basically somebody's big head hit me right here and I was bleeding and they took me to the hospital and I had to get stitched up because it was such a big, huge, bloody mess. But the way things worked out is as I was leaving, I was able to meet a lady who I never would have met in my life. And she was just sitting there crying. And I was able to go up to her, and I put my arm around her. I said, you don't know me, but my name's Jeremy, and I go to church up there at Dresden Road Baptist Church. I said, can I pray for you because you're going through a lot? And she said yes, and we prayed. And I don't know if she ever went to a church or not. I have no idea. I know we didn't see her up here, and that's okay. But hopefully she found a church, a good, Christ-loving, Bible-based church. But if not, she got to hear somebody pray for her and pray to Jesus and letting her know how Jesus died for her sins. And guys, so look, my point is that God's thumbprints are on all of these things that we see. And we oftentimes, we forget because we're such busy people, because all these things are happening around us and they tend to get us down. But God's presence is there through all of these things. Anybody else have any examples they want to share? I went through a whole bunch of examples. Somebody want to share something from their life where God is, you can just look back and like, man, he was with me through that whole entire thing. If not, that's okay. If you're feeling shy, that's okay. Amy, was that you? No? Okay. Okay, that's all right. That's all right. No big deal. That's okay. Guys, but I think that the important thing is that you look back and you see where he is at work. Guys, and so we see this in Genesis 24. We saw how basically, you know, we can see God in all of this in finding Rebecca for Isaac, because she was there all along. She was going to be the answer all along, and how that was all going to work out. And so, guys, what I want to look at, though, and because this is, and I heard a guy preach on this recently, and I thought it was fascinating. There's God's thumbprint. Let's talk about Thomas for a second. Let's talk about Thomas, guys. This was again. You know, I like to do research a lot, especially when we talk about some stuff. And I came across this guy, and he was talking about Thomas, and I started to think about it and pray about it and look over it, and I was like, man, this is important to talk about, and it fits in, I think, well with what we're talking about here, talking about God and his plan, right? And in particular, not so much God and his plan, but also, guys, how we sometimes forget that God has a plan. We forget that. If you guys would join me, please, join me in the book of John. You called it. The book of John. Alex called it. See, guys, because with that first video that I showed you, you know, we see, and this is how we wrestle with our conscience sometimes. Where sometimes we're like, yeah, all in. In this case, it was like, you know, Jesus, you're in control. Here's the stool. And then other times we're like, no, I want to do things my way, or we get scared, or we get troubled, and then we lose control of what we were looking to do. So if you guys would join me, first of all, in the book of John, we're going to be there for a couple of different things. John 11, please. John 11. Now, when we think about Thomas from the Bible, Thomas has a reputation. Okay, as a guy who worked with teenagers, sometimes teenagers make reputations for themselves. Sometimes good, and sometimes not so good. If we're looking at Thomas, Thomas doesn't have a very good reputation, because we don't call him Thomas, we call him Doubting Thomas. But let's look at him real quick, okay? So we're going to be in John chapter 11. I'm going to read a little bit. This is talking about the death of Lazarus. And this is an important account from the Bible that we're going to see. And there's multiple things that we're going to look at. So I'll read here. Chapter 11, verse 1. Now a certain man was ill, Lazarus of Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. Remember, Jesus was very close with them. It was Mary who anointed the Lord with ointment and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was ill. So the sisters sent to him, saying, Lord, he whom you love is ill. But when Jesus heard it, he said, this illness does not lead to death. It is for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified through it. Okay, so let's stop there for just one second. He said, you know what? This is not going to lead to death. This is all for the glory of God. And I'm going to show you how it's for the glory of God. Verse 5. And again, guys, we go back to our same thing. The troubles we have in our lives, those things that we struggle with, for the glory of God. Verse 5. Now, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. Doesn't that seem contradictory? You just found out somebody that you love and care about is really sick and possibly dying. So Jesus said, I'll stay here for 2 more days and then I'll go see him. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Guys, because, and we're going to read further, but that's an important part, right? People are like, I mean, we're going to read here and be like, well, what are you doing? Confusion. What's going on here, Jesus? We don't understand what's going on. And you're going to see how this all works out so well for him, and proves the point that he's hoping to prove. Okay, so he stayed 2 more days. Now again, if that happened to us and one of our loved ones was sick and you decide you're going to stay for 2 days, people might think you're heartless. What's wrong with you? Why won't you go see them? Why aren't we doing this? And Jesus says, watch and learn. All right, and so then, guys, here's the other thing. So when he heard that he was ill, he stayed 2 days longer in the place where he was. And then after this, so 2 days have gone by now. Now we're in verse 7. After this, he said to the disciples, let us go to Judea again. And so now it's time to go back to where they were before. We didn't go over chapter 10, but what happened basically was he was there and he was preaching and they got mad. And you know what? They wanted to stone him. They wanted to kill him. And you know, so he came across the river over here into chapter 11 where we're at. And he's like, okay, time to go back. Now we're going to go back. And again, you see more faithfulness right here. The disciples said to him, though, Rabbi, the Jews were just now seeking to stone you, and you're going to go back? Yep. And Jesus answered, are there not 12 hours in the day? If anyone walks in the day, he does not stumble because he sees the light of the world. But if anyone walks in the night, he stumbles because the light is not in him. After saying these things, he said to them, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I go to awaken him. And the disciples said, oh, well, Lord, if he's just fallen asleep, he'll recover. And they think he's taking a nap is what they think he's doing. Now, Jesus had spoken of his death, but they thought he meant taking rest in sleep. Then Jesus told them plainly, Lazarus has died. And for your sake, I am glad that I was not there so that you may believe. But let us go to him. Now, I'm going to stop there for a second and just kind of jump forward and tell you what happened. Do you want to jump in? What? Exactly right. Because, what he's saying is, he wanted to make sure, I don't want to say this the right way. He wanted to make sure that, you know what, they realized that Lazarus was dead and that there's only one way he's coming back. That's it. There's only one way. Like, let's say people were like, hey, Jesus, Lazarus, he's close to death. And then all of a sudden, Jesus shows up there, and he's like, Lazarus, you okay? And all of a sudden, he recovers. People would be like, oh, well, Jesus didn't do anything. God didn't have any power in that. Lazarus was just sick, and now he's good to go. Everything's fine. No, he's like, you know what? He's going to be dead. He's going to be dead for a while, and I'm going to go raise him from the dead. And that's exactly what he did. That's the reason he waited a couple days, guys. But when we're talking about Thomas here, let's look at verse 16. So Thomas called the twin, said to his fellow disciples. And again, we're talking about doubting Thomas. Everything we know about Thomas that we hear about Thomas, we're like, doubting Thomas, the man of no faith. Thomas, that guy, he says, you know what, Jesus, let us also go that we may die with him. Or in this case, Jesus, if you're going, I'm going, and I'm going to die with you if you're going to die. Thomas has faith. Right there, you see it. You see Thomas's faith right there. He's like, you know what, Jesus? I'm all in. You're going, I'm going with you. You die, I'm going to die. That's how this works. Let's go. And so even while the rest of, and again, this is why I say he has a bad reputation, but you know what? You see the other disciples, they're like, no, Jesus, we can't go back there. They're going to hurt you. They're going to kill you. And Thomas is like, let's go. I'm ready. Let's go, Jesus. I'm marching, and I'm going right there with you. He had faith. But guys, something happens between him being right there and then getting to the guy that is considered to be doubting Thomas. Okay, let's actually, I'm going to scroll, because I have my iPad up here. I'm just going to scroll through some of the things that happened between John chapter 11, what I just read, and then John 14, which is where we're going to be next. The triumphal entry, right? So we're entering into the last week now, Palm Sunday. The washing of the feet, when Jesus washed the feet of his disciples. He predicts that somebody amongst him, amongst his closest of friends, is going to betray him. He predicts that Peter is going to deny him. And he also knows that he's going to be arrested, tried, and murdered soon. Now, we need to take this from the perspective of Thomas. And guys, I want you to think about Thomas. Look at him in that one moment right there that we saw him before, chapter 11, in complete and total faithfulness. Right? You know what? He is all in. If Jesus is going to die, he's going to die with him. And that's going to be okay because he loves Jesus Christ. Because then all these things happened. And think about this. Like, at that moment in time when you know, Jesus is like, we're going to go raise somebody from the dead. And he's like, yeah, this is so cool. Let's do this. And now we've just seen a bunch of things happen over the course of the next couple chapters. We've just seen things start to spiral out of control. Right? Things were good before. and now they're spiraling out of control. You can just kind of picture Thomas sitting there kind of being like, whoa, okay, wait a minute here. Wait, okay, we raised Lazarus from the dead, and now we're going into Jerusalem, and you're telling me that you're going to die, and you know, someone's going to betray you, and then people are going to deny you, and now all of a sudden, things are getting shaky. Things are getting shaky. And folks, that is an example, a perfect example of our life. Right? Because at various points in time, there we are, and we are so on fire, and we are so ready. We will do anything. We'll run through a wall for Jesus Christ. And then sometimes, when all of a sudden the world starts shaking around us, and people are getting sick, and we're running out of money, and we don't know, do we have to sell our house or not? You know, people are yelling at me, my job, I don't know if I'm going to have my job for much longer. You know, you think of any variety of things, folks, that we encounter on a daily basis or a weekly basis, things that could certainly shake our faithfulness, and we turn into that, okay? We start to, if you will, deny, because we're going to see what happens now in John 14. So, if you would, guys, John 14. And this leads us to a really great part, and we see in here, we see all of a sudden Thomas gets real shaky. He was good, things started spiraling out of control, and remember all those things had just happened, and now here, Jesus is still talking to him. I mean, like I said, someone's going to betray him, someone's going to deny him, he's going to get arrested, he's going to get murdered, this is all going to happen, and he's talking to his disciples. And he says, "Let not your hearts be troubled, believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, would I have told you that I go to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again, and I will take you to myself, that where I am, you may be also. And you know the way where I'm going." Enter Thomas, who is completely freaked out about all the things that have just happened over the course of the last several days and weeks, and he's a little freaked out. And he says, "Lord, we do not know where you are going. How can we know the way?" And so he's listened to Jesus all this time. The same guy who a couple chapters before was all in about, you know what, he's going to go die with Jesus, and certainly that is okay because that's where his faithfulness and his spirit was at that point in time. And then all of a sudden, things got really scary and really shaky. And his life was just like, he didn't know what was going to happen. He didn't know what tomorrow was going to bring. And think about ourselves in our lives. We don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. You know, today may have been a fantastic day, and tomorrow may be an absolutely horrible day. You know, I mean, we don't know. I mean, I'm going to use Elijah as an example with this, but he said he had a terrible day yesterday because, what, he didn't like the rice for dinner, and, what, he didn't get to go get a cookie in the morning, right? That was kind of it, right? I mean, those are the main things that you only get to watch one movie instead of two. And so it was a horrible day. And I said, "Buddy, you know what? It's okay. Don't worry about it. Go to sleep. Tomorrow's a new day. Tomorrow's a chance to be even better." And he said, "What if it's worse?" And guys, that's the truth, right? Because we don't know. I mean, we don't know what tomorrow holds. Or at least in our mind, in our heart, we're like, "Oh, goodness, you know, what is tomorrow going to bring? We're so afraid. We don't know." And Thomas said, "You're going away, Jesus. You said, you're telling me you're going away and that I know the way. I don't have a map. I don't know what you're talking about." He said, "How can we know the way?" And Jesus said to him in one of the most, I don't want to say popular, but most quoted scriptures, with that, it is amazing. And guys, I did a little, it's in the Greek, it is ego emai, amai, ego amai. It means I am. And so he says, "Ego amai, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." Yes, exactly. It is an amazing verse. You are right. And then just reading verse 7, he says, "If you had known me, you would have known my Father also. From now on, you do know him and have seen him." And guys, look, and so what we see here is Jesus he is responding to Thomas. And in this case, he's questioning. He's like, I don't know what tomorrow is going to bring, Lord. I don't know. You know, if you're gone tonight, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know what it is that I'm going to do. And I don't know what the answer is. And Jesus just says, I am. I'm the answer. And guys, we look at multiple places, other where in John, where he says, I am. I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world. I am the door. I'm the good shepherd. I'm the resurrection and the life. He goes on in chapter 15 to talk about I am the vine. And here he says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And so he's telling him, I am. I am. I am. And while you may be shaky in your faith, while you're not sure what tomorrow may bring, and you have all these horrible things that are happening around you, and you are scared, know that I am the way. That's it. I am the way. And so, guys, if we look at ourselves in this, you know, we like I said, Thomas, and we go on, you know, the part we're very familiar with Thomas about is where Thomas is, you know, Jesus has been resurrected from the dead, right? He has risen from the dead, and now all of a sudden, you know, he wants to see the holes in his hands and his feet, and he wants to put his finger in there and whatnot. And guys, that's the part we remember, but we see what got him a little bit to that. Guys, the fact that he at one point had amazing faith, and then all of a sudden, because things started getting really shaky around him, he kind of lost his way. But Jesus is the way. And he tells him so. And he tells us so. And so, guys, while we're afraid of what tomorrow brings, know that the plan is already written. Right? God already knows. His fingerprints are all over what is happening in our lives right now, what has happened in the past, what has gotten us to the point that we are at right now, and will continue to get us through to what we have in the future. But guys, oftentimes we could very easily replace doubting Thomas with doubting Jeremy or doubting Alex, right? Or doubting really any of us. Because guys, we get to those points sometimes where we get so afraid and we look around and we're like, man, everything's just falling apart. Where's the answer? Jesus is the answer. And that's exactly what he was telling him. Guys, let me see here. I'm going to just follow my notes, make sure I don't forget anything else I wanted to say. I said all that. Wonderful. Guys, so the point I want you to walk away from here with is just that. Is we know that God is in control. And we struggle sometimes with just giving him our issues and our problems and the things that we struggle with the most and our fears of what tomorrow might bring. But if we just remember, if we look back, guys, you can see how God's gotten you to the point you're at right now. You can see it. You can see what he has done. All those little things that you think, man, that was quite the coincidence. No. You see his hands on you to get you where you're at today. And that's important for us to remember. Hey guys, I'm going to pray. We're going to sing a song, and then we'll go home. Okay? Father God, I thank you so much for you. Lord, I thank you for the fact that of the things going on in my life and in all of our lives, Lord, the things that we struggle so heavily with, the things that make us so afraid. Lord, that we end up like Thomas at times, Father, where you know, and even my own self, where I'm so on fire for you, Lord, and I'm just so excited to preach your word, and I'm so excited, I want to change this community, I want to change lives, Father, and then other times because things around me have started to go sour, maybe I had a bad day at work or whatever the situation, and then Father, there I am, and I'm like, what am I going to do? What's going to happen now? What does tomorrow bring? Father, we take so much solace in the fact that we don't have to worry about what tomorrow brings because you already have that under control. Father, I thank you for your plan of getting Isaac and Rebecca together and how that worked out. I thank you, Father, for the non-coincidences of my life that have brought me to where I'm at today. And Father, I pray that you would continue in my life and in all of our lives, Father, to let us see your hand upon us, Father, moving us, sanctifying us, changing our lives, and doing things that bring you all the glory and all the honor. Father, as we walk away from here tonight, let us remember that. That if we wake up tomorrow and tomorrow is a horrible day, let us not sit there and wallow long in our own self-pity, Father, but understand that, you know what, it's a day. It's a day that you made. We're still blessed in it. And that tomorrow's a new day. And the day after is a new day, Father. And that you have a plan for us. May we be obedient in following your lead, Father, and go where you want us to go and do what you want us to do. Father, I thank you for these awesome people here tonight, for the people watching on Facebook or wherever they're at, Father. I ask for your blessing upon us as we go forth. Let's leave this place and let's share the good news with this city and with all the people around us. Let's change lives, Father. I thank you for who you are. I thank you for all you do. And I thank you for your everlasting hands in our lives, Father. We love you. It's in Christ's name we pray. Amen.